Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 1:13 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time, and today is May 7th. And I'd like to kick off today by looking at China, where the CSI 300 was up over 1%. It is trading below the trend mean, but not by a great deal. And it wasn't nearly as overextended relative to the trend mean as the A shares were. And the CSI 300 might be considered the benchmark, since this is the futures traded index. But there was an important development in here today with China. And it's that there is increasing speculation that they're going to speed up the opening up of the financial sector. And that will be greeted with enthusiasm by some of the international banks, considering that China is obviously one of the largest economies in the world, and they'd like to have a footprint there. But I find it quite interesting that it is the financial sector that they are deciding that they want to open up. That they have very strong opinions on their reticence to open up the technology sector. Well, what can we draw from that? Well, obviously, they see that there is greater potential for growth in the technology sector, and there are well-known risks in the financial sector. China has been persisting, and I think surviving, for an awfully long time on land sales and a dependence on infrastructure development. That has fed through to a property boom, and Chinese properties, particularly in tier 1 cities, are comparable in price with tier 1 cities anywhere else in the world. But of course, the broad swathe of people are nowhere near affording those kinds of prices. And of course, if you have got a substantial debt issue, you've got a lot of non-performing loans, and the banks are rather leveraged to those non-performing loans. So what do you do about it? Well, one of the easy things to do would be to diversify your risk. And how do you do that? Well, you open up your banking sector and you encourage other people to come in and take a piece of it. That way, if it turns out to be a big messy situation, then it's not just your problem, it's everyone else's problem too. So the administration there have a clear incentive to diversify their risk by opening up the domestic banking sector. And that flood of international capital has the potential to be rather positive in the short to medium term, but then it is probably going to even further exaggerate some of the excesses that you have in the Chinese banking sector. Now, HSBC has got a considerable position in China, and it has been largely ranging below 800p since the year 2000. It has steadied over the course of the last few weeks, but it really does need to sustain a move above that 800p level to really confirm our return to demand dominance. And I'll put the longer-term chart for Citigroup up on a logarithmic scale, because it highlights the fact that we do have a progression of higher reaction lows within the base formation. Citigroup has one of the bigger franchises in China, and it has come back down towards the region of the upper side of its underlying base formation over the course of the last 6 months. So as long as it's holding that $60 area, we can consider that this process of consolidation is a first step above the base. Well, when we think about what the outlook is for China, I think a lot of people will continue to be focusing on the H shares, because it's where the international investors have the greatest access. And the index is right in the region of the trend mean. It is trading marginally below that 12,000 level, but still it has not broken down, and the progression of higher reaction lows remains intact. So far, we can conclude at least that as long as it is holding that 12,000 level, that people will be betting that this is support building rather than top formation completion. So it is a very interesting level at which the market is right now. But when we take a spin around the world, then one of the most, I think, important developments that we've had recently has been the relative strength of the dollar. And that is most particularly starting to look basey versus the renminbi. So I think there is ample potential for an unwinding of the short-term oversold condition relative to the trend mean, and potentially that this is a medium-term low for the dollar versus the renminbi. Now, when we look at how the dollar is performing versus the euro, then it has extended its decline, or the euro has extended its decline below 120. And this is the region of the trend mean. It really does need to post a very clear upward dynamic to begin to confirm a return to demand dominance in this area. And considering what's going on in Italy at the moment, then there may be some cause for thinking that the euro can go lower from here. That is certainly helping the Italian index, which is pushing on to new recovery highs. In fact, the index hasn't been this high since the end of 2009. So certainly the weakness of the currency is helping the Italian export business model, and it's certainly the Italian exporters are doing better now than they have in years. But when we think about what's going on in Italy, you still have no government. You have the five-star movement today saying that they're pretty much walking away from the 2 months of negotiations and they're back on an election footing. Well, it would appear that the five-star movement have learned the lesson of minority shareholders in a coalition government from just about every other country. It's usually these upstart parties that they enter a coalition, then they subsequently get blamed for everything that went wrong in the coalition, and they get annihilated in the next election. The only way that insurgent parties can turn into popular movements is if they're completely unwavering and do not compromise their ideals. That's how they can garner more people to their cause, by being completely committed to whatever it is that they're trying to election for. And of course, we can see that as well in the actions of President Trump. We also see it in Duterte in the Philippines, where there is this unwavering commitment to what the ideals that put them in power in the first place, regardless of whether the chattering classes have degree or agree with them or not. What we can see, though, is that the ECB continues to support the Italian government bond yields, and they're currently at 1.75%. Certainly nothing in the way of dynamics in here yet. And what that suggests is that we could be in for quite a bit of, I think, unruliness in terms of what we can expect from Europe. It's been a particularly quiet period of time, and not least because the ECB has bought that period of calm with a massive quantitative easing program. The fact is that the ECB is starting to withdraw from that by engaging in tapering, and that is then going to bring back some of these very big questions about the integrity of the European prospect, not just from Brexit, but from some of the peripheral nations, and most particularly Italy and indeed Spain. The Spanish have also been enduring this rather difficult environment, and the index is coming back to test the progression of lower rally highs, and it is back above the trend mean. But it is also gaining a great deal of support from the ECB in terms of that bond buying. So I think that there is the potential here that the euro could go weaker, just because of these tensions within the Eurozone, because of all these big unresolved questions. Then oil prices today were pushing through the $75 area, and they weren't quite able to hold all of the gain, but it did close above that $75 area. And of course, there is this continued speculation about the Trump administration walking away from the Iran deal. So that could contribute to sanctions, which would remove some of Iran's supply from the market. If we get a failed upside break here, well, then that's likely to take us back down towards that 7250 area. But as I was saying in the audios last week, this has been a comparatively shallow range relative to all the ranges we've seen over the last year in oil. This isn't a particularly volatile environment, and when we look at it on a weekly basis, we can see that it has bounced from the region of the trend mean, and there is a short-term overbought condition evident. So it wouldn't be beyond the bounds possibility that we do get some additional pause and consolidation here, but unless it's trading below the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And lumber prices are now, I think, unequivocally accelerating higher. They were limit up again in here today. And this continues to be an incredibly impressive advance overall. We've had two reactions so far, one in November and another at the end of February and the beginning of May, and they're relatively similar sized. So a reaction of greater than approximately $100 would be required to really question the consistency of this advance. It's, I think, also notable that the low of the reaction in November was above the previous peak, and the low of the reaction in March was above the previous peak as well. So, therefore, if we're looking for an area of potential support, it's somewhere around 540. And that is, I think, rather important considering that lumber is integral to the cost of production in the housing markets. It was a pretty positive day on Wall Street, and the Nasdaq continues to bounce here, and it is now starting to pressure that high that we saw back in the middle of April. There has been this progression of higher reaction lows since May, and it continues to find support in the region of the trend mean. We're seeing an increasing number of shares that are breaking on the upside, and the S&P 500 has continued to hold at this incremental progression of higher reaction lows. But I think everyone will also be pointing out the fact that there is a progression of lower rally highs that remains intact, and that a sustained move above 2700 is going to be the minimum required to break upwards out of what is a developing triangular pattern. Generally speaking, when we get these triangular patterns, then the breakouts tend to be rather emphatic. When we look at it on the weekly basis, this continues to look like a rather volatile environment, and we don't have the kind of really steady support building yet that would help to, I think, reinstill confidence in the market. I was at a school function last week and talking with a number of people, of the other parents that were in the financial industry, and the universal report coming back was that clients are much more cautious right now, that nobody wants to take any risks, that stops have been raised, and I think that all of that is accurate. That's exactly what we would anticipate when we're in a medium-term correction. And we have, I think, some promising signs that support is beginning to be found, but we're not out of the woods yet, and that it is going to take time for these issues to be resolved. The fact that last week we had wages that were not accelerating higher was taken as a benefit, but there are rising inflationary pressures. They haven't shown up yet in the clear statistics, but they are out there, and I think that that is something that is continuing to weigh on sentiment. US 10-year Treasury yields have been pausing over the last week or two, in the region of this 3% level, and it is a very mild pullback. Certainly nothing in the way of the kind of downward dynamics that we saw, for example, at the end of excuse me, the beginning of February, or indeed back in October when that 2.4% level was first tested. This has been a very mild pullback, and we know that there's a great deal of additional supply is coming through. And quite apart from the fact that there is potential for inflation to pick up, I think the much bigger question that people are not willing to really talk about is the deteriorating fiscal situation of the US government, that there is an enormous amount of debt that needs to be refinanced and indeed funded. So that in normal circumstances would require a higher yield to encourage people to buy it. So the fact that yields have been so firm, well, we don't have to look far for a rationale to support that. Now, there was an article that I posted, I'm going to post in comment of the day today, and it's talking about the impact that globalization has had on manufacturing. That manufacturing has been relatively stable in the official figures for much of the last decade, but the fact is that the vast majority of those figures have been supplemented by the productivity gains that have been pushed through in the computer and chip sector. If you just strip out the computer sector from manufacturing, then it's in terminal decline. And that is, I think we now have statistical evidence to back up the feeling that lots of people who were voting in elections over the last few years have been communicating, that the manufacturing sector is in crisis, that people are experiencing lower standards of living, and that they want something done about it. And the data is increasingly pointing towards the failure of globalization to give everyone a fair shake, that it has been enormously successful in raising living standards in the emerging markets, but that has been at the cost of eviscerating the industrial or manufacturing heartlands of North America and Europe. And when we then take an additional step forward, we can see that it is, in fact, the countries that have spent the most on automation have held on to their manufacturing, and without automation, that manufacturing has migrated. If we take an additional step forward, we can see that it is where that manufacturing has migrated are the countries that are investing most in automation to ensure that the manufacturing stays where it is. Therefore, there is, I think, a clear conclusion that it's technological innovation that has, in fact, helped to preserve jobs rather than to lose them, but rather it is globalization has contributed to job losses. Now, if that particular view gains greater credibility among the populace, then the potential for significant change in terms of electoral results and trade policy, that represents a significant risk to markets. That's something that I think we need to pay particular attention to, and not least because we are in this rangy environment. If we do get trade wars, then that is directly inflationary, because part of the rationale for it is to push up the price so that higher price workers, in fact, become more competitive. I think there are some very big issues that are likely to come onto the forefront or the front page news item over the course of the next 6 months. This is, I think, going to be a rather important conversation that people are going to be having. But I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.